Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fucking Adians? How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. What's happening with you? Today on the show, I talked to Wolfgang Van Halen. He is Eddie Van Halen and Valerie Bertinelli's son, and he's a fucking amazing musician. I learned a lot about him. Look, I knew about his dad because I remember... I guess, what year did that come out? That first Van Halen record? I don't know, man. It must have been, I feel like I must have been a sophomore in high school, freshman or sophomore in high school. I could do the math, but it was around there. The reason I know I wasn't a senior is because I remember walking, I had to walk through the senior parking lot to the dirt lot where we could park, and I just remember... the windows of cars open, just playing Van Halen's Eruption. It was like, it was a seismic shift in the cultural universe. It just, everything changed when that first Van Halen record came out. And around that time, I remember like maybe a year later, then, you know, Sultan's A Swing came out. There was a lot of things going on musically. Like I remember like freshman year, there was a lot of Foreigner around. Whatever was going on, and, you know, there was some new wave stuff, and I didn't really lock into the punk stuff, but there was no way to avoid Van Halen 1. It was everywhere. The only other time I remember that happening is when I was in New York City, I guess the early 90s, when Nirvana's Nevermind came out, and everywhere you went, it was there. But that was the same with Van Halen 1, and I remember I went to see Van Halen on their first tour, and I didn't see them. I remember it's an odd thing. I remember the opening band, I think, was called The Cats, if that's possible. And I remember some kid that I didn't know that well that made me nervous. He was not he wasn't scary in a physical way, but, you know, he was a little tweaky and a little intense. And I saw him. I had good tickets because I think my dad knew the promoter or something. And we were down the floor, and that kid gave me a pipe. I took a hit out of it. And then I don't remember much of anything. I think I ended up on the floor, which wasn't unusual in high school, but I missed the entire Van Halen set. So I wish I could say that I had my mind blown by Van Halen, but I didn't. I had my mind turned off by something in a pipe and probably a mixture of alcohol and other drugs. But nonetheless, I don't want to get off rambling about Van Halen because I'm talking to his son, and you can't avoid talking about that. There's a new... behind the music about Wolfgang and just about him dealing with his father's passing and their relationship. And it was a beautiful thing. You know, this is a solid kid, this kid, and an amazing musician. His most recent record is called Mammoth 2. He's on tour in the US and Canada in August. And I just had a lovely conversation with him. But, you know, a lot of it was about Eddie and what it's like to be Eddie's kid and, you know, what that means to fans. Both for, you know, good and bad. But I was very, just a solid guy and a solid musician. So look, I am, you know, in Vancouver, and I was trying to get ready to do this talk to you. And, you know, I just found myself, you know, rewatching a fucking reel, scrolling. I watched a reel of women pretending to fart in front of their partners like four or five times, like with some sort of straw device. Four or five times I'm watching women fake fart in front of men for a reaction. Four times. I'm not going to get that time back. I've got a problem. There's got to be some sort of recovery for this scrolling compulsion. It's ridiculous. I don't have any trouble locking back into reality. So it's not like other drugs. You know, it's not like, you know, I pull out of the phone and then I'm like, you know, I need an hour or two just to regroup. I mean, I'm still, and I'm very aware of this. It's weird because I'm watch the phone and then you're in that world and it takes over your whole fucking brain. And then you're out, shut it off, move away from it, close up the app, and I'm back in the real world. There's no big adjustment, and I don't crave to get back into the phone, and I don't mind the real world, and I'm fully engaged in it. But once I get on the phone, I just start to do that thing. And I don't know. I guess I need help. I guess this is a cry for help. It could be other drugs. It's not. It's, you know, there's some heavy fucking fentanyl casualties around here. You know, I guess it's probably fentanyl and meth, but I can't stop. I'm kind of fascinated morbidly, and I always have been, with the effects of drugs, you know, on the streets. And obviously it's devastating. It's sad. But I mean, this goes back to when I lived in New York on 2nd between A and B, there was just the junkie parade. You know, there was a drug dealing doorway next to where I was living. I was sober then. I think that was the first shot at being sober. Was it what, 88, 89? Right. Yeah. So I think I was sober for the first time about a year. And I remember moving down there and just seeing these fucking heroin zombies line up in the doorway next to where I lived, you know, waiting to get their fucking stuff, waiting for the fix. And it was just it was so sad and disturbing. And I'd see it every fucking day. Needles on the streets, people nodding out, little parades of junkies, some of them, you know, trying to get on the methadone. And they'd walk in groups of two or three with this sort of weird heroin hobble and, you know, in and out of nodding off, tilting. But the weird thing about it is, and I guess this is part of my brain that I always have to be aware of because, you know, this is what sobriety is based on, is that at some point, after a year or so of looking at those sad cases, the shift from like that is so sad to like wonder what it's like. I wonder what, you know, what is it that they would sacrifice their life and their dignity and their sense of self to maintain this fucking life? How good is it that you, and obviously it's not about good necessarily, it's an addiction. But, you know, it was obviously what was making their life worth living for, I guess, or maybe it was what they had to live for because of their disease or their addiction. But at some point in time, it must have felt pretty fucking good. And that's the scary moment when you're a drug addict where you're like, yeah, that's fucking awful. Yeah, okay, all right, I'll try it. But this fentanyl thing, the thing that I'm noticing is that, look, when I was hanging around down there in the Lower East Side, there was a nod. You know, there was the nod is that you'd see these heroin junkies tilting, but it was just sort of like a quarter way down, you know, like a quarter way down, you know, usually, or quarter way back, where they'd just be standing there in the fucking nod. But the tilt was like, it was about quarter way. And what I'm seeing on the streets here is like full tilt, man. You know, I'm 90 degree angle to like all the way folded over, but still standing. And I was thinking like, well, it must be some kind of effect on the spine or something is happening in the nervous system that's the difference, you know, with this fentanyl stuff in terms of that tilt. That nod. And then I saw an article about that, just addressing that full tilt nod of fentanyl. It just said, why, you know, whatever the headline was, why does fentanyl cause this? And so I'm thinking like, I'm going to read it and I'm going to find out some science about this because I've been curious about it because I'm walking by a lot of these addicts down here. And I read it, and the primary difference between the quarter tilt heroin nod and the full fold fentanyl nod is it's just that much better a drug. That's all. There's no science to it. It's just twice as good, so you get twice the fucking tilt. Now, look, I know some of you can be sensitive about that. Like, no, it's not good. There's nothing good. It's a joke. Relax. But that was the hard science behind it. The reason why they're tilting all the way over is because the high is that much more intense. And it's easy game, I guess, you know, if you're kind of insensitive to make fun of drug addicts or houseless people. And it's not really where I'm going with this. Because there's some part of me that there's full empathy to it. But there is a sort of comedy to drug addiction. And I know this because I've spent a lot of time in meetings and, you know, God willing or the universe willing or themselves willing, if they are able to kick the stories you have about the human experience and the darkness of it in terms of humor are profound. So I'm not just blatantly making fun, but I did see these two fentanyl addicts down here in on Hastings Street, and they were fully tilted. I mean, like they're like fully folded in half, standing next to each other, having a conversation, probably about a very small amount of money or another corner. But they were just doing that. They were both down there, folded in half, chatting. So what that indicates to me also about this particular drug is that they think they're standing up. This is just part of the thing. You know, because they don't go all the way down. They're not laying down. You know, they think they're functioning in the world. It's a very sad thing, but also not unlike many sad things. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And I hope they get sober. Did I bookend that all right? Did I qualify that properly as to not make people upset with me trivializing or dismissing the horrors of drug addiction? Did I? Folks, I'll be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on Friday, September 20th. Then I'm in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. There's a lot of dates coming up towards the end of the year and into next year. You can go to WTFpod/tour for tickets and see all the latest updates to my dates. There have been some to make room for this movie. So tonight, Alejandro Escovedo's in town here in Vancouver, and he's asked me if I'd play a couple tunes with him, if I wanted to. And of course I want to. And it's weird. It's not weird that, but I'm still really not confident playing guitar with people. I get profoundly nervous, and it reminds me because the other night I did a set down at the Comedy Underground. I was talking to these comics. There's a lot of amateur comics that come through these, you know, rooms. And they're trying stuff out, but most of these comic run rooms are people that are pretty, short. You know, they haven't been in the game long, and they're trying to figure it out. And I'm talking to some guys that have been doing it like 6 months to a year. And they're asking me questions and whatever, but just talking to them about, you know, that first 5 minutes that you have, that first 5 to 8 minutes that you have ever as a comic, and how you lock into that, and the kind of panic you experience for sometimes weeks on end just to get ready to do one spot or two spots, the thinking about it all week, the nervousness that, and all you got are those 6 jokes, 7 jokes, 8 jokes, and you just hang on to them because you're just trying to figure out how to stand up there and do them. But the nervousness, for me, it used to consume my brain. I would have an open mic to do, and I'd have like 4 or 5 minutes of stuff, maybe 8, and the entire week was fucked because all I'm doing is thinking about that. And I told one of those guys the other night, I'm like, I am so glad I don't have that anymore. I mean, I have nervousness about other things, but I will tell you, though, when I got to play guitar at a thing, and that's with a band, you're not even up there by yourself. I mean, God forbid you're going to fuck up. I'm going to fuck up. But you got a whole band there. You're not going to sink the whole ship, for fuck's sake. But Jesus Christ, I'm consumed with nervousness. I'm working on these goddamn songs. There's nothing easy about it. I want to have a good time, but I'm so nervous about playing well that, you know, I can't. And I wonder if that's like most things in my life. I'm so nervous about doing it well that I'm missing the whole enjoy the experience part. Huh. Might have just come on something there. I might have just had a realization there. The songs are Beast of Burden and Like a Hurricane. I don't know either of them, but I learned them, and hopefully it'll stick. But I do know one thing about me. If I got to play guitar in front of people with other people, I'm going to choke a little bit. I'm going to fuck up something and hopefully get back on it. Man, I one time choked with Jimmy Vivino at a gig on Going, Going, Gone, the Dylan tune. And it's a song I played before. Yeah, and then I fucked it up, and I had a hard time finding my way back. And it was so embarrassing because it's like you got a 3-minute song. All you got to do is get through the song. I mean, it's not a challenge, but that is what you're supposed to do when you're playing a song with a band. And, you know, and you fuck it up, then it's like you just, what did you fucking do? It's 3 minutes, dude. You couldn't, like, just pay attention. Anyway, see, this is how I beat the shit out of myself. This is my process. All right. So, Wolfgang Van Halen. Very exciting. I didn't know what to think or what to make. I watched the behind the music. I listened to his music. I really listened to some of his old man's music. And it was fun, man. It was fun to do that. You can watch that behind the music on Paramount Plus. He's also doing a stadium tour throughout August in the U.S. and Canada. Go to mammothwvh.com for tour dates and tickets. And this is me talking to Wolfgang Van Halen.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
You're just back?
Yeah, I just got back.
Like when?
Friday. Yes. What day is it?
Today's Sunday.
I got back yesterday.
Yesterday from?
From Munich.
Munich?
Yeah.
So are you all fucked up?
I'm very fucked up. I was more fucked up there than I got some sleep when I got back, but flying out to... Basically, I think I spent more time in the air than I did.
What there. Was it? You just went for one show?
Yeah, we were opening for Metallica in Munich.
So all you guys just went out there for one?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was that important?
Opening for Metallica, yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, the way they tour, they have this very unique schedule,
yeah,
where it's two shows a week,
yeah,
and they have different openers for each show.
Oh, I
show.
See. So that you weren't just popping in on one gig and they were going night to night.
Yeah, no, that was the one we opened on that one, and then they did a show 2 days later in the same place.
Yeah, who and, opened that one?
I believe if it's the same as last year, yeah. It was Ice Nine Kills. And,
I don't know.
Yeah,
you're sitting here pressing your brain. I'm like, it's not gonna make. I was trying to think. Like, it's so weird because I was like, all of a sudden doing this research because I saw your dad, and I'm sure you get this all the time from guys my age. But I was trying to track it because it was not a great experience for me. It was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I grew up. It must have been the second tour.
Mm-hmm.
And all I remember is some creepy guy who went to high school with me saying, you want to hit a hash. And I took it, and I blacked out the entire fucking... I didn't see... Van Halen. And I kind of remember some band called The Cats open for them.
Yeah.
And I tried to like validate that. And then for a minute there, I couldn't find that the tour even existed. I was like, I know I was there.
So your body was there, but you,
yeah, no,
you
no, I missed the whole thing. It would probably have been a good show. It's probably going to be a great show. But I remember that guy's face exactly, the guy with the fucking pipe. I remember that guy.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it worked out for that guy. Yeah. You know, I'm doing okay. But I'm sorry I missed Van Halen. But so do you know those guys in Metallica pretty well?
I mean, I had met James once in 2015 briefly. And then I met Lars at the Taylor Hawkins tribute show in London. And,
yeah.
And then we sort of hit it off there, and then we got the ask to open for them like a couple months later.
From that gig?
Yeah.
And that's where you did the Hawkins tribute?
Mm-hmm. I did the LA one too, but
that was the first one, the LA
UK
one.
The UK was the first one.
Oh.
That was the one that was broadcast, and the LA one was just the sort of
party.
Party arena.
Yeah, show. Yeah. Oh, so that was the one that was broadcast. Because I watched, you know, the behind the music thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, what you were going through leading up to that show, I was like, that's fucked up. because it was like your personal struggle.
Yeah.
Like no one else was thinking like, if he doesn't pull this off, he's never going to get out from under these fucking idiots that won't leave him alone. Yeah. But like you were like, this is it, man. This is it. It was specific.
Oh yeah. If I fucked that up, I would have I wanted to die.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I mean, what was going on? I mean, how long had that been going on for, the trolling?
Oh, my whole life. Since before social media.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Since you started playing publicly.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what band.
Yeah. I mean, I had a little band in middle school, but we never played shows. So,
they didn't fuck with you in middle school. There's no one in middle school going, nah, this guy, his dad's good. But it started like with what band?
Playing in Van Halen.
Oh, but not before that?
No.
Oh. So what was it, just constant?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from a neutral standpoint, I completely understand.
I guess, but you know? I don't. I got into it with trolls this morning. And what you don't realize when you're engaging, which you should never do.
Oh yeah, I've taken a big step back, and it's done wonders for my mental health.
Oh yeah, because like there's part of your brain that's like the entire internet, and it's like no, it's seven guys. It's seven guys.
It's the vocal majority.
Yeah, it's like yeah, but it sometimes it's literally a group of 15 dudes. And
people who just revel in it. Yeah,
and that's their hobby. Is to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
I engaged this morning, hadn't in like 2 years. And it was like, I was like, why the fuck am I here?
Yeah, then that just weighs on you all day and it's just fucking pointless.
It's corrosive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, you know, the thing is, it's like when you engage, you're like, I got this one.
And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it works out very well. But then other times it's like, ah, fuck, we both got mud on us. And now what the fuck?
Yeah. And they keep last wording you.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
You can't, you know, you can't. It's even if you're just, the worst part is you're like, you know, let's be straight with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, look, man, I understand what you're saying. And
we're just people, man. Yeah. Like, let's just get through this. Like, you don't know me. I don't know you.
Yeah. You suck. you can't win.
It's impossible.
But I mean, how did it affect, like, how engaged with it were you when that went down? Were you obsessed with, like, just all?
No, not obsessed. In fact, I tried to avoid it.
Yeah.
I think, because it was only in really dedicated spaces back in the day, obviously. Like, there's...
What are we talking, 2006,
2007. So, like, all the dedicated, like, VH, you know, message board. I mean, do people even use message boards anymore?
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff like that, like dedicated websites where it's like, okay, just make sure I avoid those.
And but it was enough for you... Because, I mean, you were playing well.
Yeah, I was just having a good time enjoying, you know, my newly sober dad and jamming with my family and having a wonderful time. And it was just this wonderful, happy, joyous thing until it went public. And then it was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I can see why people would want to hate me.
But it was like, were they crying about Mike?
Yeah, that. And I think that's not something I, you know, that's between, you know, my dad and him.
Yeah.
I was just there to kind of... make sure my dad stayed on the sober path that he was on. Me being there for him and just kind of keeping the train moving was my full intent. Like, I would make the set lists and everything. I started putting in like B-sides that I don't think Van Halen ever played back in the day.
Just to keep them engaged?
Yeah, I just wanted to give the fans something, because it's like, why can't we just make music and have a good time doing it?
You know? Yeah, did you play from all the records?
I mean, all the Roth albums, yeah.
Yeah. And he was back in for a while?
Yeah, for the time that I was in, so the 12 years that I was a member, yeah.
I interviewed him, man.
How was that?
Well, you know, you got to keep him focused.
He likes to go all over the place, though.
I know, yeah, and it was like, and I kind of knew that right from the beginning, and I would just keep going.
You just got to strap in.
And I was just kind of, yeah, but I kept going back. I kept trying to hold him. To like, and people
good on you. Good on you.
People were impressed. They're like, dude, I never heard an interview like that. You know, it made sense. You know, he told the weird thing about him is I knew his uncle used to hang out in the comedy club. It was a comedy manager, Manny Roth.
Yeah. He, Cafe Wa.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he used to hang around the Village Gate and that part of the neighborhood when he was old. He must have been in his 80s. Mm-hmm. He was wearing his little scarf, and he had a young, hot Asian wife. And like, you know, and he was a real showman.
Yeah.
Because when I was talking to somebody about this morning, because I told him I was talking to you, it's like, you know, David Lee Roth is a song and dance man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all vaudeville. You know?
Right.
That's his thing.
That's it.
Yeah.
And you guys get along?
Not really. At least as of recently, I thought we were on good terms, and he actually made a couple YouTube videos about me, about how much he doesn't like me. Which was like, okay, cool, man. You know?
What was his justification?
He basically just said a bunch of stuff that was true to him,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's not true, because the people that are going to listen to it will believe it and use it to hate me anyway. So you just got to move forward.
What the fuck are these guys? I just, like, for the show tomorrow that I'm putting up tomorrow, I just went off on this weird. It's like, do something with your life. Why? How is this your fucking hobby? And why are these guys, like, you know, these old guys, it's just like, just shut up already.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm noticing it more now. Like, somebody's like, oh, yeah, on that movie, we didn't get along. It's like, why now? That was 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
They need attention.
I think the big thing, one of the bigger things is that my dad isn't around. So I think he just went for what's still there to kind of point at.
Were they having difficulties on that tour?
Always. Oh. I mean, throughout their history, I think absolutely. I don't know what it is with 80s bands. Like just there's always fucking something. Like I've kind of used it as my own. Just like, I don't want this to happen. So it's like, for my band, it's like, why can't we just have a good time
right.
and just be happy and make music? Like, is it that fucking difficult?
You never quite understand what it is. But, you know, it is one of those things where when you start out as kids and you've paid all your dues together, there's just no way at some point you're going to not be like, just shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? It's just like, how's that? I talked to Geezer Butler.
He's great.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a wonderful, friendly man.
Do you have that book?
I do not have that on me.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I'd love it.
There you go.
Oh,
I read. I don't always read, you know, what comes, but I didn't know about Sabbath. Okay. You know, and it's all there, dude.
It's fascinating.
But you know what broke them apart was, like, you know, management and weirdness and bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
But all your guys seem like good guys.
Sure. But the bullshit happens, and
sure.
and there you go.
And you gotta get past it. Because I guess if you have musical differences, you know, the possibility of those escalating into personal differences.
I think the really tough thing with Van Halen is that, you know, my dad and my uncle never talked about it. You know, they just pushed forward and kept doing what they were doing. I think that left room for interpretation or one side to be loud about it, to have the only truth be out there, and that's the only thing that people end up believing. And when, you know, that's not necessarily the case.
I didn't even know, you know, until I watched the video, like, and granted, you know, I haven't kept up with Van Halen throughout all of it. I mean, mm-hmm. they you know, I was probably in 10th grade when that first album came out. Was that 78?
78, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I'm in 10th grade, and all I knew is that the world had changed somehow. Because, you know, you could drive at 15 in Albuquerque, and there was, like, the senior parking lot, mm-hmm. and, like, every car
is
just, like, eruption. Yeah. That's all you heard. And then people were like, what is happening? Yeah. Because, like, the day before, it was Foreigner.
Yeah. You know?
And it was just, like,
and then eruption happens.
Yeah, and then it happened. But so I don't know the whole, you know, history, but, like, you know, a lot of it, you know, when it was, you know, reported that your dad died of cancer, that was that. Mm. But it was a long struggle with a lot of different illnesses.
Yeah.
You know, including addiction.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, the way you described, you know, the end was, it was not, you know, it was not cut and dry. It was a real struggle.
Yeah, it was the hardest thing I've ever been through.
I can't imagine. And I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, no.
It's fucking terrible.
Thank you very much.
But I'll tell you, man, like, you know, I watched that, I watched you do that thing at the Hawkins tribute, you know, in the documentary. But then I go in my house, I'm like, I got to find it. You know, I got to. Because I knew what that guy was going through. He's like, it's a lot on the line that no one knew about.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you know you were in the pocket right away?
I think once it was over, and I didn't. I think you can almost pinpoint it. Once I get done with the solo on Hot for Teacher, which is the second song,
yeah.
I think Grohl and I, during the verse, we just kind of lean up on each other's foreheads and just kind of wait for it. And in that moment, I was like... Like, I can now enjoy the fact that I'm fucking playing with Dave Grohl and Justin Hawkins and Josh Fries.
Yeah.
And it was over. I did it. I pulled it off.
Yeah.
And man.
And did you see results?
In what way?
did the shit talk stop a little bit, or by that point you just quit looking at it?
Yeah, I think it's always going to be there. Yeah. I think because it's irrational. It's just at a certain point, the thing that angers the people who hate me is that I exist.
Right.
You know, just sharing blood with my father is enough to upset people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of people finally gave me credit. And then there was a whole other bunch of people that were like, there's no way. It was pre-recorded or something. It was
the
tracks or
that's so fucking horrendous.
I mean, they said that when the Van Halen album I played on came out, everybody was like, Ed must have played the bass and stuff like that. So
what? It's a fucking nightmare, dude.
But that's if anything, you take that as a compliment because you know the truth.
Right.
I know I did it.
Yeah.
And so if it's to them so unbelievable that it must be tracked, it's like, damn, I must have done a good job.
Yeah. that's a good way to spin it.
Yeah.
And Grohl is like, as time goes on, I interviewed him years ago, but as time goes on, you're like, this guy's a great guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, you watch those videos.
You know why he's not an 80s guy?
Is that it?
The 80s guy is where all the drama and the bullshit are. But, you know, I think everybody just learned how to grow up as time went on.
Well, he had a pretty difficult front man for quite a few years.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess it was different. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, the 80s were, like, because everybody was so gunning for this hugeness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people got it. And then a lot of people just disappeared. And now they're back.
Exactly.
But he seems like a genuinely nice guy.
He is.
I like when he pulls his fans out and lets them play.
Yeah, everything that you would imagine him to be, he is, in the best way.
Yeah. But, like, I listened to, like, that fucking solo you did on Take a Bow. What the fuck? That's awesome, man.
Thank you very much.
Because, like, you know, obviously, you know, you have flourishes of what you grew up with, but the phrasing is totally different.
Yeah, I think people are sitting there just kind of waiting for me to, like, outdo my dad in some way. And it's like, that's impossible. I am not him, you know?
Right.
I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah. Like,
and if anything, I'm outdoing him in that way because he wouldn't be able to play all the instruments on something.
That's right.
Like, yeah. I'm a better drummer than he was, but nobody says that. But, you know.
But that guitar solo is crazy. It's good. It's got a lot of elements. There's even like almost a proggy moment in there.
Yeah, that was a really fun. It really felt like an evolution
From
the first album. I think I was so focused on the first album on just kind of discovering the identity of what I offered as my own songwriter.
Yeah, sure.
But by the second album, I was ready to just kind of stretch a bit more and be more comfortable. And I think that's where that solo came from.
And where do you like when you listen to your music, or when you're kind of like, because you have your own sound, and it's not, you know, your references are not Van Halen.
Mm-mm.
You know,
because I mean, that's in me.
Right.
Know? Like, that's the thing. When anybody asks, like, oh, who's your favorite guitar player? Who's your favorite drummer? I never mention my dad or Al, because it's so obvious. It's
sure.
It's in my blood.
Right,
it's not
right,
even worth
right.
mentioning.
Yeah, outside of my family?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, who are they?
It's kind of all over the place, really. I think a big, and especially actually recently, there's a guitar player who I just toured with, which is really cool. He has a band called Intervals.
Yeah.
Aaron Marshall is his name. I think he's just an amazing guitar player, and he
yeah.
inspires me. I was always a big fan of Paul Gilbert back in the day. I thought he was one of the
Who's
shredder.
That guy?
He's just one of the shredder guys from the 80s.
Oh, really?
He was in Mr. Big and Racer X, and he was one of those guys that sort of came a little bit after Dad, that I think took it in an interesting direction.
Yeah.
Instead of just tried to, because in a way, Dad kind of ruined the musical
Freddie.
Landscape. Because instead of everybody wanting to find out who they are, they just wanted to be that.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Exactly.
Yeah. But also, like, it feels like your structure of, you know, like it feels like that Van Halen was a pretty hook-driven band.
Yeah. I think people focus on the guitar playing, but overall it was the fact that Dad is a great songwriter.
Yeah.
And that's what I shoot for too. It's not about flashy stuff. Like, there's stuff in there if you want to geek
on it. But you're like a riff guy.
Yeah, there's riffs, and I focus on overall the creation of the song because I'm playing everything. You know?
Oh, yeah. Still?
Yeah.
But not, and then on the road you just take the band?
Yeah, yeah. I got my live guys that help.
But on the records you play everything?
100%. Every single thing you hear is just me.
Is that just a control freak thing, or
I think people want to turn it into that, but I was just really inspired by the way Grohl did the first Foo Fighters album, and since I could play everything, I wanted to see if I could do it. And with the first album, I found out I could, and I had such a good time that it's just like, man, let's just keep it going.
And you can do your own pace.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to
exactly
like you don't have to yell at anyone to do it.
If anything, it's like reverse control freakism, because it's just a way to deter the bullshit after what I've seen through the years with Dad. It's like,
why involve anybody else?
Because it'll just get filled with drama and bullshit.
Rock and roll drama.
And I'm having fun with it. So,
that's great. Yeah. Now, your uncle's not in the doc. Are you guys all right?
No. Yeah. We're great. He just, he's incredibly private.
You know, really?
I think that's another portion of why the Van Halen truth is always decided by other people outside of the family, because he never feels it worthy to speak up, because it's just not something he's interested in. He's a very private guy.
Don't want to be dragged into it.
Yeah, and especially, you know, with Dad not here. There's just no desire really to...
Yeah, to drag it up.
Yeah.
And he's still around here?
Yeah. He actually just wrote a book that's going to be coming out soon. That's really cool, because, you know, he's never really spoken on anything much, and for him to finally have this opportunity.
A memoir?
Yeah.
No shit.
And it kind of just like the opportunity I had with Behind the Music, like finally getting our opportunity to tell our own truth from our own side is really nice. So.
Well, I think the undercurrent of, you know, what makes the Behind the Music so interesting and different than the rest, it's not like this sort of, the arc is not of self-destruction. Your dad had a degree, but it's you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what comes through and what makes it a kind of uplifting story is that despite whatever chaos was going on with him personally or even your parents, is that, you know, it wasn't directed at you.
No.
Ever.
No.
Like, I mean, Jesus, the way Valerie Bertinelli, your mom, you know, just talks about, you know, how much your dad loved you and how much she loved you. It's like you're right out of the gate. You're like, oh, my God. You know, this is such a good kid. Look at him. He's doing everything. Like, you know, there was, thank God, there was never a point where you're like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Yeah. No, it was, I think that's why it's so tough for me to be okay now, because like his love was such a huge part of my life that now without him here, there's just this black hole in me that it just can never be erased. And it's just me trying to figure out how to hold it.
The grief.
Yeah.
And how are you doing with that? How long has it been now? Like a few years?
It's been in October. It'll be 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's hard, man.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I think the way, you know, that when you released the song, I mean, that was, you know, very, you know, honest and heartfelt and like in a beautiful kind of honor, or you know, what would you call it?
Homage.
Homage,
you know,
yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah. The poetry of it was beautiful, but you know, even when you do that, it doesn't satisfy the absence.
No, not at all.
And so, how do you experience it on a day-to-day basis?
You know, as time goes on, it gets easier. You figure out how to carry it.
Yeah.
You know, but still, there's plenty of times where it's almost like. I think the closest way I can relate to it is almost like a PTSD style sort of triggering, where it's like if I hear, you know, a heart monitor,
yeah.
the beep of a heart monitor, it takes me back to the hospital.
Yeah.
If I hear the sound of an automatic hand sanitizer dispenser, it makes me think of being in the hospital and hearing that sound,
oh, so
walking out of the room and putting the hand sanitizer
right.
on. Little things like you don't realize,
but not the music.
No.
Yeah.
When it comes to listening to Van Halen, I really can't.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult for me. The hardest thing was for me to listen to Hot for Teacher over and over and over again to like make sure I had the solo down.
Had the licks.
It's just very tough for me. And I think it's like the exact opposite. I think for the people that miss him, being a fan, is that all they have is what they've had to begin with,
yeah.
Which is the music.
Yeah.
And for me, that's all I have left. And,
right.
And so to not have him, it makes it very difficult because there's so much I wish I could share with him.
Well, it's interesting because of like what you were saying before that, I don't know if you've ever sort of, fucked around with, codependency recovery or any of that. Mm. But, you know, the idea that, you know, through most of your life, you felt like you had to keep him on track.
Mm-hmm.
So that bond is almost, you know, it's deeper in a way because you have the relationship, the love, but then you have this kind of, this responsibility and this panic
at all
times, which, you feel necessary.
Yeah, I never expected to be in that sort of position so early in my life.
What are your earliest memories of the family?
I mean, I think my mom was really good at hiding the bullshit from me.
Yeah.
That it almost gave me the superpower of total awareness that I was always really able to start to tell, like, oh, if something's wrong, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, surprise, I'm going to a friend's house after school today. What does that mean? What's happening?
Yeah.
And it turns out, oh, they're giving him an intervention. Stuff like that.
Yeah. So your earliest memories, he's already pretty fucked up.
No, actually, one of my earliest memories during the Balance era of the Van Halen album is he was sober for that tour. And I remember that specifically because he cut his hair.
Yeah.
And so I always related his short hair to good times.
Right.
So that when he got sober in 2007 for the first time and cut his hair after a long time, it was like, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
This is incredible. Everything's go okay again.
Yeah.
For a little bit. And then, you know.
How old were you when they split up?
It was 2006. So I was, what, 15?
Oh, so it was like later. They already kind of hammered it out.
Yeah.
But when did you start playing?
I started playing drums when I was 9.
Yeah.
Guitar when I was 12, and bass shortly after.
And it was just, I imagine that immediately, like I'm sure you have no memory of your dad kind of wondering like, how's this kid gonna turn out?
Yeah, he never pushed me into it. But when he saw that it was there, he was just very excited about it. And I think I remember there being a moment of my dad going like, dude, like listen to him, like he can play, and mom just being like. Yeah, I see where this is going, and I understand that. I understand that that trepidation on her part. But I think I've managed to use my dad's experiences and been able to carve out a path of least destruction so far.
Well, I mean, I guess it goes either way with people that grow up in that. Either they become sort of like, constant kind of like, is everything okay, people? Mm-hmm. Or they become, addicts themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I got a bit of that for sure. But I think the big thing that you see from a lot of people in my position is that desire to chase everything that came before them rather than trying to find their own identity.
Really?
Just trying to be their dad.
Oh, people in, few people that are following in their dad's footsteps in the arts.
They do their most to to just be like, hey, I'm younger. I'm the next generation of him and I'm doing what he does. Come see me play his songs. And it's like, that's not what I want to do at all. I want to
now.
Be, yeah. It's like, I want to be my own person.
But you felt that before.
Well, when I was playing with him, yeah, obviously that was what I was getting out of that is
but
being able to.
When you start, like, is there a support group for children of? are you and Jacob Dylan talking?
Not really.
No.
I remember actually when he passed.
Yeah.
Somebody that reached out to me that meant a lot was Zelda Williams Robbins.
Oh yeah,
daughter, and she's wonderful, and she really made me feel. Not alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's nice.
And she's wonderful.
Yeah, that was a tragic...
That broke my heart.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's just like, there are these guys, and I think your dad's one of them, where you're like, well, what's the world going to do without that guy?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, fuck.
You know what I mean?
What are we going to do?
Yeah, and then some of the ones from the 60s are still plugging along.
Yeah, how the... Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But so when you start playing... When do you start, like, you know, actually, like, sitting in? Like, I mean, if you start playing drums when you're 9 and your uncle's helping you out?
No, actually, it's a funny thing. Everybody assumes that my dad taught me and my uncle taught me. And the only thing that my dad taught me was how to play drums. He taught me just, like, he put, I've told this story a bunch of times, but he put, like, books on a table.
Right.
I was like, with this hand, do this, this one. And if you do your foot in between that, that's Highway to Hell. And,
That was the one.
Yeah, pretty much. And I took that and I listened to Van Halen Best Of Volume 1 and Anima of the State by Blink-182. And those two albums, I just tried to replicate everything I heard. And that's how I learned how to play drums.
Really?
Yeah.
And you just sat in there and did it? So you never, like, you don't want jazz chops or anything like that?
I mean, I think it might be a little too late for that now. Just kind of a heavy-handed sort of rock vibe, I guess.
Did your dad like AC/DC?
Oh, yeah. That was one of our bands.
Really?
Yeah.
Which album? Bond stuff?
Yeah, Powerage.
Powerage is the best record ever.
Absolutely. Down Payment Blues.
The best.
The fucking best.
Riff
Raff.
The best. Yeah. That album is like, I still listen to that album.
Highway to Hell is very special to me as well, but Powerage is just the motherfucker of an album.
I know. Well, Highway to Hell was like, you know, this, like, oh, you know, here we, they're, now they're going to take off. Yeah. But Powerage is raw as fuck.
Absolutely.
And all the songs are different. Mm-hmm. I turned some kid on. I'm doing this TV show with some kid. He must be in his early 20s. Never heard it. Never, I got to turn that kid on to Zeppelin 1 and 2.
That's amazing.
And Powerage, and I just watched this kid listen and like, what?
Oh, man, that's incredible. I love
Powerage,
it.
Powerage, Down Payment Blues is the best.
Yeah.
Did you ever fuck around with those songs?
It's funny, the way he introduced me to AC/DC was my parents pulled me out of school for a week.
Yeah.
And they rented a Winnebago and we went to the Grand Canyon. And he played Big Balls for me off of Dirty Deeds.
Sure. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
That song made me laugh so hard, just the way Bon Scott sings on it.
Yeah.
And from there, I loved AC/DC ever since.
That's how you got in? Big Balls.
Big Balls, yeah.
And that's on that weird record, that first, what is it, early?
That's on Dirty Deeds, I think.
Dirty Deeds, yeah. Right. But that got released later. It was released in Australia
first.
Yeah,
there was a weird Australian release and then a U.S. release.
Yeah. And what other stuff was he playing that got you going when you were like 10?
It's so funny. It was really just AC/DC. And then the only other thing that we really bonded on that he loved was Peter Gabriel.
What?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even get there.
Yeah. You're not into Peter Gabriel?
I mean, the hits were okay.
So is an incredible album.
Okay.
I remember there was one night where he had like a speaker system on the floor. He had headphones. He's like, Wolf, listen to this.
Yeah.
And he turned on Red Rain, which I think is the first song on that album.
On So.
And he just cranked it loud. And just hearing that, like, just changed my life. That is an incredible song.
Yeah. I mean, like, I tried to get into, because I got vinyl in there, and I'm one of those old idiots. It's,
oh, I'm, you know. Me too. I collect all that shit.
You do?
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, I had like a few hundred records from high school that I've been carting around. And then all of a sudden you hit a certain age where you're like, well, I need to get all the records ever made, I think.
Complete the collection, yeah.
Yeah. And they're one of those bands that I had to go back, like, you know, like, because I'm not that prog driven. Mm-hmm. So people are like, you got to listen to those first two Genesis records. And I'm like, I listen to them like, I don't think I have to.
Yeah, it can be a bit too proggy.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't, you know, land with me like... You know, Rush is pretty good, and like, but you know, you listen to Yes, and it's sort of like, all right, I still just like that one part of Roundabout.
Yeah, exactly.
When, you know, in and around the lake, like the AC/DC part of Roundabout.
Yeah.
But what's weird when you listen to the vinyl of that shit is that you hear that they're bands. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just grow up listening to that shit in your car, you're like, this isn't even real. I mean, but when you listen to, like, to Yes or that Genesis stuff, you can hear those if you have a good system.
Just dudes in a room.
They're just dudes in a room. Just
dudes in a room.
And it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing I take away from it. It's amazing that, like, you know, they were just dudes in a room.
You used to have to really, really be able to play, you know, to pull that stuff off. And nowadays, technology has really helped us.
Yeah.
Enabled us to play entire albums on our own.
Yeah.
But back then you really had to, that's just dudes in a room.
But do you like the dudes in a room thing at all?
Totally. Yeah. And I did that. I did that.
On the Van Halen record?
With Dad, and I was in a band called Tremonti, and I did that there. And, you know, I think so many people are like, why don't you do that? And it's like, I already did. I've been on a path that led to this, and this is where I find, you know, my most artistic satisfaction.
But you're also just on the beginning of the path, so there's no reason to think that at some point somebody's going to say,
Who knows? You know, I'm having fun right now, but maybe on the fifth album I might be like, fuck, I don't want to play drums.
I mean, get some guys in here.
Who knows?
Put a little combo together.
Let me figure it out. You know, don't figure it out for me.
That's the weird thing, too, about playing with Van Halen. I mean, like, to play in a trio, it's as a rhythm section, it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, that certainly is. Yeah,
right?
You forget. Yeah, Van Halen is literally just a trio.
It's
crazy. When it comes to the band.
When I talked to David Lee Roth, he put it in such a weird way. He said, the best metal band of the 80s were, you know, two Asian guys and a Jew.
Wow.
And I'm like,
that is an incredibly poetic way to talk about Van Halen, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I never thought of that. You know,
I love it.
So, when you're growing up, I mean, when did that? You know, the first, because your mom seems like such a saint, and she has a lot of I think, you know, looking back, she's been able to seemingly integrate whatever shortcomings she had in the dynamic, but still seems very grounded.
Yeah.
Was she always like that?
Yeah, I think it's a reason why maybe I don't have a coke problem, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not just some shitty fucking asshole with a coke problem.
Right.
I think she instilled a bunch of, you know, morals, and same with my dad, with even the issues he had. You know, I think just their, you know, regardless of the issues they had together, when it came to me, they were fully, you know, and unconditionally loving, and I think that really helped me figure out how to operate as a person, for sure.
And when they split up, yeah, I mean, you were still young enough to have to do the whole, you know, some time here, some time there stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That always fucks you up, but that seems like a rite of passage at this point with divorce rates in the country.
Yeah, yeah. Mine didn't get divorced until I was in my 30s, so I got off easy. I didn't, I didn't have to decide who to live with.
Yeah.
Thank God.
That's good.
Yeah.
You got to take them when you can.
But when, how old you when were you when he got that first cancer?
Oh man, they were still together. I was really, really young. But then it was taken care of. You know, they just kind of chopped it out of his tongue and he was good.
Yeah. But you didn't stop smoking.
No.
You love those fucking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And, but was that because I know your mom was talking about, like, and we told him and she hints at this thing, you know, and I think when I talked to David Lee Roth, too, because I imagine that David Lee Roth, when they started playing, knew your grandparents, right?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't around too long.
Right.
I know my grandfather didn't even make it to the Hagar era, I believe.
Yeah. Did you know them?
No, I never met him. I knew my Oma.
Yeah.
She passed in 2004. Oh, but she mostly spoke Indonesian. She didn't really speak much English.
Wild.
Yeah.
And you didn't speak any of that?
I did not. I just, anytime I'd go over there.
Did your dad?
Yeah. With my dad, we would always go over there, and she was always, you know, belly aching about something to him in Indonesian, and he would always just be like, "Dah, ma." Yeah. So maybe they were speaking Dutch. Yeah,
yeah,
probably.
Maybe Dutch.
So I, you know, but she was always very sweet to me.
Yeah, grandma.
Yeah.
Right. but your mom hints at this, like, this, and I think it's an easy thing to backload, especially because, you know, trauma is so discussed.
Yeah.
That there was this idea that, you know, your dad just didn't want to deal with, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah, I think he had a very traumatic upbringing.
And, how so?
I think his mom was very rough on him.
Yeah.
He always told me that she would tell him that he was a nitznut, which was a nothing nut. You'll amount to nothing.
Ugh.
He sure fucking proved her wrong. Well,
that drives you sometimes.
Yeah, I guess. So, you know, maybe.
Yeah, and I think David, you know, sort of said that, you know, they got, like, there was racism.
Yeah. Oh, big time. It's funny. People don't really think about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he looked just like kind of a white dude.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you know, when he came to America,
yeah,
he was treated that way.
Yeah.
You know.
And they had to deal with that, both of them, huh?
Yeah, big time. I could barely speak English, only knew like 10 words. Came to the country when he was, God, what, six?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he just, yeah.
They had to deal with all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But you never had those kind of conversations with him?
Oh, no, we certainly did. I mean, we talked about just, you know, everything that he'd been through and all that. But yeah, it was a lot of stuff.
As time went on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as he got older and you got older.
Yeah, but I think, you know, at a certain point, that trauma is just so baked in that it's very tough to deal with. I mean, he did eventually get sober and he had his you know, troubles with that. But, you know, near the end, he was mostly sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a totally different guy?
For the most part. I think that was another big thing for him was his anxiety. And that's something that I very much am realizing I share with him.
Yeah, because there was I think there was a moment where, you know, he was scared.
Yeah, that's why he drank. Even just from stage anxiety, that's why he would drink. He just couldn't handle it. And I think that was a big reason why being on tour with him in 07 and starting that gave him the confidence to be able to do it without drinking was looking over and being like, well, fuck, if my son can do it, he's 15, I better fucking nut up, you know? And so in a way, that was kind of the only way it could have happened at that point.
And was there a difference in his playing, drunk and sober?
No, maybe in his understanding of playing together, because sometimes he would count wrong and Al and I would save him and he would have no idea. But but that's just a fun thing. But yeah, not really. He was just always brilliant.
So before Van Halen, what were the musical projects you were involved with?
Nothing really. I was just kind of a bedroom, you know, I learned everything.
Really?
I would learn all the tabs from bands that I liked and I would play with friends in middle school, like in my music room. And that was kind of it.
Were you like, but were you up there all day long? Just like,
I was always playing drums for the most part. And it wasn't until, you know, I would visit Dad and Al at the studio and they were playing and I would pick up a bass and start playing a little bit that it was like, oh, this is pretty fun.
Let's keep
doing this. I was 15, 14 at the time, I guess.
So you didn't pick up a guitar?
I mean, I picked up a guitar when I was 12.
Yeah.
For a talent show at school.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never, I don't know. I was having the most fun on drums and I didn't really want to. I mean, my dad did start on drums, so I guess in a way I was following his footsteps, but yeah, it was just too daunting of a task for me to compete with everything Dad had done on guitar, which is why I guess it's taken me so long to feel comfortable playing guitar in something.
But it's not that long. I mean, and like, you know, you're a very proficient player and you could really, like, I've got guitars
all over. Yeah, but I'll never be my father.
Yeah, but so what?
But exactly. That's my answer to that. Who fucking cares? My dad was my dad.
Yeah, but no one's ever. Yeah,
no one's gonna do that.
Yeah, I mean, but like I got guitars all over the place, and I can't get out of a pentatonic.
And who cares? As long as you're having a good time.
I'm having a pretty good time.
Exactly.
But there's some part of me that's like, just sit down with the thing. It doesn't matter.
Run through the scales.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that you're 60. I just learned my Mixolydians like 6 months ago.
Yeah, see, I don't even know that shit.
Yeah.
I just play what sounds good.
You don't know that
shit? At least to me.
But you know how to read tabs.
Yeah, but that's like simple, at least in comparison to like actually reading music.
Yeah, you can't read music.
No.
And you
Dad couldn't either.
Yeah, but you don't know this different scales?
No, I don't know the difference between fucking Mixolydian and fucking Nickelodeon.
Yeah. All right, so I just got to relax, I guess, you know?
Yeah, just chill out.
And I just never... but you do know how, like, one thing you did do, though, was you could listen to a record and be like, I'm going to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what were you doing that with mostly when you were younger?
Let's see. I mean, AC/DC was big.
That guy, he's all pentatonic.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that he's Angus is really blues based, yeah. But he's so anarchistic with the way that he plays that it doesn't feel like it's bluesy.
I know, it's
crazy. That's what I really enjoy about Angus's playing. It's just all you know,
it's
overwhelming.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Did you meet that guy?
I met him once, yeah. I also met Malcolm, who is arguably the best rhythm guitar player in history.
Totally.
So it was an honor to meet them. I've met Brian a couple times over the years, and he's always wonderful too.
Yeah.
But, let's see, I was big into, I still am, Alice in Chains. I really love Alice in Chains. You know, they're great. Jerry's awesome.
Were you a Soundgarden guy?
Yeah, certainly. I love Soundgarden, but I think if I had to pick, like, the grunge band for me, it would be Alice in Chains.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was when that was that era, right?
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I wasn't super, at that point, I was growing up, I was listening to like Blink-182 and System of a Down, everything all my friends were listening to in middle school, but I still had that appreciation for those other bands as
System
well.
System of a Down, pretty intense.
Yeah, very, very intense. I remember in middle school trying to learn Chop Suey. That's how I learned how to read guitar tabs.
From that?
Was with some, trying to learn System of a Down in middle school, yeah.
You meet that guy? He was around here, I think. Serge?
I have not met them.
He's an intense guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on there politically, and there's a whole other country involved.
Yeah, they are super intense, for sure.
Yeah. But were you ever, like in terms of, like, a message other than just sort of the poetry of your brain, did you ever feel like you were fighting that fight?
Not really. I think I'm more just about trying to figure out my own shit through music and trying to work through my trauma, you know?
Yeah.
And I can barely figure that out. So if I don't want to try to start speaking for somebody else when it might not be my place to do so.
What's your process with the songwriting?
Usually I figure out something that interests me on guitar, you know, maybe just absentmindedly strumming on the couch or something, coming up with something that's cool, throw it on a voice memo, and then make a demo on my computer, and from there, just kind of see if the idea evolves, and we'll see what happens.
But it starts with the music first?
Always, yeah. Then when it comes to vocals, always melody, because I think that is kind of the most important thing, is having a melody that flows comfortably, and then you figure out the words later to make sure kind of that the vowel sounds are almost comfortable, because I hate when you can tell certain singers are just kind of shoving lyrics into it just to kind of fit. I think it should flow kind of comfortably.
You know,
the meter of it should kind of feel good.
Yeah. And I imagine the Foo Fighters are kind of an inspiration, right?
Absolutely. The Foos are probably one of the bigger ones. Same with like Nine Inch Nails. You know, I'm just a really big fan of like when there's just like a guy, and it's like, you know, Trent Reznor, Dave Grohl, and it's just kind of comes out of them, and then they have the people they rely on, and then they take it on together.
And that guy, he's got drumming for him, is Nine Inch Nails guy, right?
Josh Fries. Well, Josh Fries has guaranteed, if you've never heard of him, you have at least listened to him. Just look at his Wikipedia. He's played on everything.
Yeah.
Everything, and he's fucking incredible.
Yeah, he's a monster on the drums.
Yeah.
So after, like, you know, like after you do that run, so your dad gets the tongue thing, mm-hmm. and then it's years?
Yeah, no, it didn't come back in any type of scary, meaningful way until, let's see, I mean, like 2013, 2012, 2011, maybe.
Oh, really?
And then that was right around when he got sober again. And
was he going in and out of rehabs and stuff?
He did initially. And that the first time, at least after touring, it really didn't work because they got him hooked on all these pills to get him away from the booze. And it just fucked everything else up, because then he started drinking again on top of it. And it was just a fucking nightmare. But
did you go to like family days and shit? Was he ever doing inpatient and kind of
sometimes?
Yeah.
But I mean, there was, I mean, a couple times we went to like therapy together. Yeah. And I had to try and figure out how to tell him that, you know, I couldn't even word it properly what was I, 17?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just tough to put it into words, but he eventually figured it out, and it was good.
When it did get scary, like, how did you know it was scary?
You could always see that he wasn't there. You could look into his eyes and see that there wasn't, like, it was just kind of glazed over.
Right.
You could see him in there.
Yeah.
And you'd know he was there, especially, you know, when he would tell me he loved me or said something nice.
Yeah.
But you knew that he was easily irritable and that there was just something off. It was very easy to tell, at least for me.
Yeah.
You know.
And in those moments, did you feel helpless?
Yeah. Big time.
Because, like, what that's, I guess, the most horrible thing is that, like, there's nothing I can do.
Well, and you begin to normalize it, too, until, you know, a third party comes around and goes, like, well, yeah, that was fucked up. Yeah. It's like, oh, shit, you're right. That is fucked up. Most dads don't drive around with an open bottle of wine in the car, you know?
Yeah, with their kids and their friends.
Yeah, and it's like, fuck. Like, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. But yeah. Did he have close friends?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that's a tough thing being fucking Eddie Van Halen is that you never know who to trust.
That's right.
And I rarely trusted anybody that was around him. And I mean, at a certain point, he didn't either, you know?
Yeah, because they're just on for the ride and they're fueling the bad shit.
Look at how many fucking books have come out about my relationship with Eddie Van Halen. And that tells you every answer you need to see.
Are there a lot of them?
Yeah. There's another one every fucking week. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, really? You guys are that close? I don't even know who the fuck you are.
Are you that guy who came over once?
Yeah. Oh, that guy that was fucking annoying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, do people buy those fucking books?
Yeah. Yeah. There's an audience for that that just desperately needs to consume everything.
Well, know? That's the scariest thing about, and I don't know, like, it seems like a lot of the dudes in the dock, I don't know who the trusted humans are. What's that?
They're sort of the, as we put it, the collective brain trust of everything with my band and all the decisions that need to be made so we can, you know, make sure that we push forward in the most succinct and agreed upon clear way for the best results.
Right. But that's also like a first line of defense against sycophants and weirdos.
Exactly. I think we're able to take anything, any issue or any event, and we're able to talk about it and find a solution that we can all agree upon and move forward with.
Because that's another thing about those 80s bands is that, you know, there was just, because I was a kid, you know, in my early 20s doing comedy at the Comedy Store in the, you know, 87. And, you know, that was when hair metal was all over the place. Mm-hmm. And there were just, like, really fucked up people.
Too many ulterior motives, too many personal managers, too many guys going, hey, Dave, you'd be better without these guys. You don't need them.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden he leaves, and there you go.
Yeah,
and,
you know, you want a bump?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like the bump guys.
Using, you know, people, there's a lot of people who are like, so what did you learn in your time at Van Halen? And it's like, most of the stuff I learned was what not to do.
Right.
What to avoid.
For you.
Seeing the history, knowing that I could, you know, like, hey, find people you trust.
Well, when you were in it, like, were they still around?
No. I think they had it figured out. But I think just hearing stories but then also just seeing the relationship of like, hey, man, I wish we could all get along. Wouldn't that be great?
You know?
Instead of just kind of here to play together and then see you later.
Well, I guess, you know, it seems like, you know, I got a buddy of mine who's a music manager, you know, John Daniel, he's a Crush Management.
No.
Oh, yeah, he's got like, I don't know, he's got Train and Courtney Love and the Weezer now.
Yeah.
But a sweet guy. But like, you know, when he was in music, you know, he kind of told me that these personalities, you know, specifically at front men,
I found that My dad would call it LSD, lead singer disease.
Yeah.
You know, when there's, I found most singers who maybe can't play an instrument, are kind of there to be there because they wanna see everybody look at me.
Yeah,
you know,
and they're a little nuts.
Yeah, yeah, it takes a little bit of you know, narcissistic, idiocy to kind of
John was a bass player. So the rhythm section, they're like, solid. You know what I mean? Like,
Because the bass player, he doesn't want to be there because he wants to be the bass player. He's there because he wants to play.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right. And then the drummer's the drummer. And then like the guitar and the lead singer, that's got to be the roughest.
That's the toughest position because that's what everybody's looking at.
But in terms of like, you know, Sammy, I mean, do you have a relationship with
Not too much. I mean, we're cordial, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, it's just, I'm just desperate to avoid the drama, You know, I just want to be, I just want to kind of figure my own shit out and just avoid the drama in all ways I can.
Well, I read some piece that, you know, you had a nice, you know, interaction with Anthony.
Yeah. Mike is great. I think he's another one that's just kind of caught in the crossfire between everybody, between the singers and all that. Mike,
but he came to see you out in Vegas, was it?
Mike is just a genuine good dude.
Yeah.
And I just think people wouldn't expect us to be friendly with each other, but it's like, that's when you get lost in the social media battles of bullshit.
But the other point of it is, on some level, it's like you were a kid.
Yeah.
You, that's the kid that was hanging around.
I was a kid just trying to...
You know what I mean? Like, so those guys at least have to know, like, oh, yeah, it says Wolfie.
Yeah, Mike was like, yeah, no, Wolfie's a good kid. Yeah, and that's all he said. But then and then it just became a...
Oh, that became a fucking shitstorm too?
No, not that. That was good. I'm just talking about, you know, me being in VH to begin with.
Oh, but, yeah. Yeah, right. But do you find, you know, what kind of, in terms of the possibility of, like, sycophants and weirdos, do they come at you? I mean, you know, do you have your own now?
At a certain point, I think I've blocked, like, all of them. That's a wonderful feature on social media.
Yeah.
You know, and when any weird vibes show up, it's, like, gone.
Yeah.
So I may have carved my own little position where I don't get it that much anymore, but they're definitely out there.
But do you have fans that are...
Yeah, there's wonderful people who are fans of Mammoth. You know, it's really fun when people are like, I never really listened to Van Halen, but I enjoy Mammoth. And then you see the Van Halen fans underneath them go, how fucking dare you? You know,
and they're, it's all like old dudes.
Yeah, they can just, people, it's okay, you know, like it's okay, man. I know it's special and important to you, but it doesn't mean it has to be for everybody else.
Well, it's just so funny about that generation, because they've got to be like, if you were in high school when Van Halen, mm-hmm. the first one came out, I mean, you're 60 or older. Right.
Look, I get you lost your virginity at a drive-in movie to Panama, and that's why it's so important to you, you know, but like, it doesn't mean that's a tough thing about art and music is that it's purely subjective. But, you know, what I think is objective and you can't ignore is Dad's effect on the industry and what he did for music and electric guitar. Yeah. That can't be argued. That's not a subjective thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It was...
What's subjective is if you enjoy it or not.
Or if it's even in your rotation.
Exactly.
I mean, because you've got to have this whole new generation of people that are coming through, you know, that's... I imagine the era of old guys that are closer to you are like Dave's age. Mm-hmm. And so those guys' kids have got to be listening to you.
Yeah, and that's the fun sort of that generational sort of gap you see, where it's like there are Van Halen fans who come to see me play, but they bring their kids who are fans of what I'm doing.
And right,
it's really cool to see them bond over that.
Well, that's nice.
I really love that. It's very nice.
Yeah,
because again, it's just a vocal minority that are really the dickheads. Everybody else out there is usually really positive and kind.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and listened to. First couple of Van Halen records, and it's like, wow, you know, the weird thing.
Shit's good.
But I think the difference was it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, you know, there wasn't like this teen angst.
No, there's a really cool thing about not taking yourself seriously while destroying at the same time.
That's, I think they might have invented that.
Yeah.
Kind of. You know what I mean? Because if he could have chosen to be menacing.
No, just to see Dad up there smiling while just completely shredding, obliterating everybody is just a really cool thing to see.
And when he, so after the Van Halen tour, that's when he got sick?
Yeah, so we did three tours. We did 2007.
Yeah.
Then we did an album, and then we did 2012. We actually went to Japan for a sec, Australia for a show. And then in 2015, we released a show we did at the Tokyo Dome.
The live one, yeah.
And then went on tour for that. And then it wasn't... then shit was good. You know, it was good until, let's see, about 2019.
Yeah.
And that's when it all sort of went to hell.
When the motorcycle accident?
Yeah.
And it just never relented after that.
March 17th, 2019. From that date on, it kind of just didn't, it went up and down, but it never got better.
Yeah. Sounded so scary.
Yeah, it wasn't, yeah.
I mean.
It was.
But I think that despite the tragic element and however you feel now, it's a rare thing, you know, to be able to deal with it, but also in a lot of cases, you know, people aren't there when it happens. Mm-hmm. So I assume that in the process of those last few months, you had to know, right, on some level.
I think, but I at the same time, I was so naive and so desperate to keep that glass half full, you know, that I was sure. Like, it's going to be okay. You know, we're going to get through this. Nothing bad. Like, it's not going to, like, that wouldn't happen. Like, everything's going to be fine. We're going to get through it.
Yeah.
And I think I really convinced myself of that. But there were moments where it really felt like, shit, we're going to get through this.
Yeah,
it's going to
be
fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Because he's a pretty young dude.
Yeah, it's too young, man.
Yeah.
So, like, he wasn't even older than his dad. His dad passed at 66.
Yeah. How old was
65.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But you were there for it.
Every day. Man, I slept in that hospital.
Your mom, too?
No, she visited a lot. But it was me, my Uncle Patrick, and my dad had met a caretaker.
Yeah.
When he was at this place in overseas in Zurich.
Yeah.
Who was a really great dude. His name was Leon.
Yeah.
And we were sort of this, like, unit that just were like at any time. You know, I still am start to slowly getting over. If I get a phone call outside of 8 a.m. and like 2 a.m., you know, like if I get a call either a little too early or a little too late, that my heart jumps and I'm like, oh, fuck, what's wrong? What?
Yeah.
And it came to a point where anybody like in that area knowing what was going on would call and immediately go, everything's okay.
Yeah.
But here's what's, you know, and then talk about whatever the fuck they wanted to talk about.
Right.
I'm still slowly getting over that panic of seeing the phone ring outside of a normal hour.
You know? Like, how
it's,
would
it's those
not?
Little things that you don't think about. That,
where was he? At Cedars?
St. John's, which was where I was born.
Really? Yeah. Where's that at?
Santa Monica.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel like on some level you did get like some closure?
In what way?
I mean, in the way that like, you know, when you see when you're there for somebody that, you know, is that important, mm-hmm. and family, you know, right up till the end. And he was lucid or no?
No.
No.
No, I don't think there was much closure because it was unexpected.
Was it the stroke that really killed him?
Yeah. I mean, it was due to the cancer and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to get specific. It was, I remember leaving that night, said bye, and last thing he said was, I love you.
That's good.
And it's like that. And like, I'll take that. You know?
Yeah.
I will hold on to that. And then it wasn't until I got, you know, a call early morning, the next morning, that he was kind of unresponsive. But he was still there.
Yeah.
But it was 2 days later that it happened. You know, I got that call October 6th in the morning. It was like, I think it was maybe 8:30 or something.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, the doctor was like, you're going to want to come over. It's not looking good. It's like, I'll be right there.
Yeah.
Not even 2 hours later.
Yeah. And you were just there, like holding his hand kind of thing?
10:14.
Jesus Christ. And you called your mom?
Yeah, my mom was there.
Was your uncle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
It's tough. But that's the fucked up thing is that everybody, for the most part, has to go through something like that. Isn't that fucked up?
You can't. No, it's totally fucked up.
How the hell are we supposed to deal with that?
I think about it all the time. You know, my girlfriend passed away during COVID, and it wasn't a COVID, and it was a complete, you know, she was 54, and it came out of nowhere.
So sorry, man.
Thanks. And it was like some very, you know, aggressive form of leukemia that she didn't even know she had.
Fuck.
And, you know, and she got sick, and within days, she was gone.
That's
and I couldn't go to the hospital and stuff.
Ugh.
And you just, like, what happens is that all of a sudden you're dealing with this inevitability,
mm-hmm.
and then the realization that, you know, everybody is going to deal with this somehow, and how they experience their grief, that's, you know, that's on them, but it's unavoidable.
Yeah, that's the fucked up thing. All we're doing, all life is just trying to figure out how to stay happy amongst all the eventual trauma.
Yeah, right. And also to sort of somehow, you know in your mind and in your heart that, you know, this is something built into the human experience,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, moving on is essential. But, you know, like, how do you, because when grief at the beginning, you can't control any of that shit. You can't control your crying.
No.
You can't control when it's going to happen. You don't know. You know, it's just your brain. Like, no matter what you do to be like, I'm okay, man. Just go eat. You know, and then all of a sudden you're just crying in your burrito.
Oh, dude, that whole first tour that I did in 2021
with Mammoth,
It was Mammoth. It was our first tour. We were opening for Guns N' Roses. The fuck? Every single night when I was in my bunk, I was just sobbing, just trying to keep it away from everybody. It's like, I don't want to make this everybody's problem, but yeah, I'm still going through shit.
Oh yeah,
you know, and it's just, it's all you can do is just, you know, I think. Growing up in the household I was growing up in, we tended to hold things in,
right?
You know, but I found that when it comes to stuff like this, you just have to let it out. It's like it's like taking a shit. It's like an emotional shit. You just got to get it out of your
let
body.
It happen.
Just let it happen.
And it must be amazing. I mean, did you tour with? Did you go to a lot of shows growing up?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
So like on some level, you know, just being in an arena setting. A rock show setting has got to be like a fucking trigger.
Yeah, it fucking kills me that dad can never come to a Mammoth show.
Yeah.
You know, I was having dinner after a Metallica show. They do like these dinners.
Oh, that's
nice. I was hanging out with James, and he was wearing his son's band shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Dad would like be like so stoked to wear a Mammoth shirt. You know,
they saw you once though, right?
He was there for rehearsals.
Oh, okay.
And he had the music. He loved the music.
Oh, yeah.
He showed it to everybody who would listen or not listen.
Yeah.
You know, he was super proud, which is why just to have that one opportunity.
Yeah.
I'll never have it.
And your mom goes though, right?
She's at every show. She's, I mean, her Twitter handle is Wolfie's mom. She's as proud as can be. And it's wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah.
So when you're touring with Dunzo, like was Slash, he's a good guy.
Slash is a great guy.
And was he kind of like understanding? And...
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, Slash was he's a really great dude. We actually just toured with him again.
Oh yeah.
For his solo stuff in Europe. Yeah. He's a wonderful guy.
Interesting guitar player, right?
Yeah. He's crazy.
It's like, you know, I don't even know what's going on. Yeah. He's gotten bluesier lately.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing that blues album.
It's crazy because he kind of came back around to it.
Yeah.
You know, because when I talked to him, you know, I was like, what album, you know, broke your brain? And it was like Rocks by Aerosmith. And you're like, oh, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. And, you know, the new album's great.
Thank you, man.
And it was very, you know, it was a great story. It's a rare story, you know, for that genre behind the music where... You know, you're the focus of it, but the backdrop is, you know, dealing with your dad's illness. But it's not like, it's not this sort of like, oh, it's amazing they're not all dead story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's definitely more of a different take on a sort of behind the music.
Yeah, it's more of a like a tribute and a heartfelt sort of portrait of a guy.
I mean, that's what I view myself as. I'm you know, people are always clamoring. It's like, get up there. You better play Panama for me. You owe it to us. And it's like, no, man, I think just me existing and playing music is a tribute within itself to my father. You know?
Absolutely, buddy. Well, it's good to talk to you, man.
Dude, absolute pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
Nice guy. Good musician. Sweet guy. Good kid. Turned out all right. You know, it's a good story. You can get his tour info at mammothwbh.com and watch his Behind the Music on Paramount Plus. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Hey, for Full Marin subscribers, tomorrow we've got more exclusive material from my recent interviews that didn't make it into the actual episodes, like more from my talk with Jude Law.
But I could tell that, like, I'm clearly, you know, I'm making a scene. There's other people involved. I'm a public person, not that big, but big enough for some idiot to fucking record me.
Yeah. Oh God.
And but
the joys of that now. I can't even you know, get a little pissed off without the fear also of being recorded and having that played back to me.
Yeah. Just turn around.
Like, can I please just be allowed to be annoyed?
A little bit.
That's coming up tomorrow on The Full Marin. To subscribe, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Now we'll go into the vault to find a riff. Cat angels everywhere, all accounted for.